finally a U.S. administration looks like it's going to defend Taiwan or support really 25 million free Chinese people.
Taiwan feels the squeeze from neighboring mainland China. It's Wednesday, June 6th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, kilns killing air quality in Nepal, teaching self-defense in India. China reduces its own tariffs and poverty. Intuitive bionics and Lao cuisine comes to Washington. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Just days after U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis raised the prospect of further American steps to challenge China's militarization of the South China Sea, U.S. officials have told Reuters the Trump administration is pondering whether to send a warship into the sensitive Taiwan Strait. It's a move that could provoke Beijing at a time of tensions over trade. China has been ratcheting up pressure around the island with air and naval drills. The last such U.S. warship mission was nearly a year ago. The Trump administration has approved a large arms deal with Taiwan, but Reuters also said it now appears unlikely the United States will send a delegation to the June 12th dedication ceremony for the new American Institute in Taiwan. That's the de facto U.S. embassy. Washington has no formal ties with Taipei. Grant Newsham is a senior research fellow at the Japan Forum for Strategic Studies, and he tells VOA's Victor Beatty he expects strong reaction from China after two successive American administrations backed off support of Taiwan to avoid antagonizing the Chinese.
All of this American accommodation has gotten the Chinese really turning up the heat militarily, politically, psychologically on Taiwan. So finally, a U.S. administration looks like it's going to defend Taiwan or support really 25 million free Chinese people. But ultimately, one would look at the United States government as having to bite the bullet right now for years of neglect.
You think then a transit is likely at this point?
I think it's certainly on the menu, and I would expect it to happen. But once again, that's just speculation. But this administration has got a number of things that in mind to figuratively get America back on its hind legs in Asia, and that includes some tangible support for Taiwan. And certainly sending ships through the Taiwan Strait is on the menu.
Is the Trump administration treating Taiwan differently than previous administrations?
Oh, it says it is, and it's certainly done more than both the Obama administration and the George W. Bush administrations as well. But once again, the proof is in the pudding, and we will see whether or not, for example, arms sales are to Taiwan with certain types of hardware are approved. We'll see if there's real efforts made to get Taiwan into the World Health Organization, ICAO, the International Civil Aviation Organization, to try and bolster Taiwan's position so that China doesn't keep strangling it, doesn't keep picking off countries that recognize Taiwan. Will the Americans do things like invite Taiwan to RIMPAC? Will the U.S. forces start holding exercises with Taiwanese forces?
The prospect of transiting the Taiwan Strait with a U.S. warship comes just a couple of days after U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis at this Shangri-La security dialogue in Singapore raised the prospect of additional American steps against China if its, quote, militarization of the South China Sea keeps apace.
I think General Mattis's speech, it really does demonstrate that sort of shift in thinking from the U.S. side, and particularly this administration. They are not going to continue what has been done in the past, or is really doing the minimum necessary to placate China while making it look to countries in the region that America is serious about staying in Asia and will do what is necessary to fend off Chinese pressure. And that tended to fool nobody. Countries in the region were not impressed, and the Chinese were no less, well, they were actually very happy that America was not going to do very much. General Mattis has laid out the U.S. Position, and let's see what they do from now.
At the same time, the Australian airline Qantas has updated its website to refer to Taiwan as part of China, in response to China's demand in April that foreign carriers cease referring to Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Macau as apart from Beijing. The move was criticized by the Australian government. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. Former Defense Intelligence Officer held over alleged spying for China. Myanmar defense lawyers say documents on Reuters reporters' phones not secret. Can U.S.-Seoul alliance survive a nuclear deal? Suicide blast hits anti-war Afghan clerics' Kabul meeting. At Trump-Kim summit, don't expect North Korea to foot the bill. Expanded coverage of these stories and more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. There are more than 150,000 kilns in India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, and Nepal that belch out tons of soot, known as black carbon. It's a major air pollutant and the second largest contributor to climate change after carbon dioxide. But in one corner of the region, a devastating earthquake in 2015 that laid waste to much of Nepal gave that country a chance to clean up its act. We hear more from VOA's Julie Tabo.
Under a sky darkened by thick black smoke, hundreds of thousands of brick kiln workers endure back-breaking labor and suffocating heat, working in almost medieval conditions across South Asia. But a 7.8 magnitude earthquake that hit Nepal in 2015 killed about 9,000 people and flattened about a third of the country's brick kilns. Despite the scale of the human tragedy, the devastation provided a rare opportunity for environmentalists to clean up at least one part of the notoriously filthy industry. The Brick Kiln Initiative, launched by the International Center for Integrated Mountain Development, found a way to redesign the ovens and stack the bricks differently so that less of the toxic soot is produced.
We have changed three things. One is more resistance to earthquake. The second is less polluting. And third is more energy efficiency.
By stacking the bricks inside the kilns in a zigzag pattern, the heat snakes through the gaps more efficiently, ensuring coal is completely burned, which produces less soot.
I adopted this to clean up the environment. Business has its place, but my primary objective was to produce high-quality products efficiently and with less fuel. I think this is now being adopted by others across the country.
Emissions were cut by 60%, and more importantly for the kiln owners, it reduced coal consumption by half.
Since we adopted this zigzag method, there is less pollution. We are using less coal and getting better bricks faster.
Most of the 100 brick kilns in the Kathmandu Valley have already been modified with new technology. The next step is to spread the technology.
In the coming 2 to 3 years, we intend to transform all brick kilns in Nepal. Let's see.
Brick manufacturers from Bangladesh, India, Nepal, and Pakistan met in Kathmandu this year to discuss the new design. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
Happening now, the White House says next week's summit in Singapore between President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un will be held at the Capella Hotel on Sentosa Island. U.S. and North Korean officials are continuing to lay the groundwork ahead of the summit. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. The 2012 rape of a 23-year-old physiotherapy student on a New Delhi bus put the spotlight on brutal violence against women in the Indian capital. But there has been lesser attention on sexual harassment, such as lewd comments or groping that girls and women routinely face in public places, locally known as Eve teasing. to equip them to counter sexual assault in a city known as one of India's most unsafe for women, police have been teaching self-defense techniques to tens of thousands. Anjana Pasricha visited one such summer training camp in the Indian capital.
One of the tactics that policewomen are teaching in a park in New Delhi is how to tackle men who fall on girls deliberately during crowded bus journeys or touch them improperly. The young girls and women who enthusiastically practice these self-defense techniques include 16-year-old Jagriti Chauhan. Just out of school, she's gearing up to counter sexual harassment of the kind her elder sister faced in college and public transport.
And you can not do anything because they're so huge and hulky and bulky. But now I am thinking that if something happens with me, I will not be in her place, that I cannot do anything or just go in the washroom and cry. But I'm going to tell them that I am as equally strong as they are.
Harassment such as groping, lewd comments or being stalked has long been commonplace on campuses, on the streets and public transport in Delhi. But concerns about women's safety have been heightened following the reports of brutal sexual assaults in recent years. That is why the self-defense camps organized by Delhi police have become hugely popular, attracting thousands. About 350 turned up at this one. Inspector Renu Jadhav, who is in charge of this camp, says they teach girls how a quick response and presence of mind can help tackle men who tease or assault.
We've taught them to defend themselves, how you'll use your hands, how you'll use your scarf, and if you have a water bottle or pen, how you use these to fend off the attacker.
Undeterred by the scorching summer temperatures, many parents ferry their daughters to the two-week camp. Rama Cree, who has brought her 10-year-old daughter, wants to break the notion prevalent in many homes that girls and women should not step out alone.
Due to this training, I've stopped worrying about her. Looking at the atmosphere around us, all girls should learn this. So should their mothers, to ensure their daughters are safe.
Inspector Jadhav says, besides teaching self-defense, such training also empowers the girls.
Basically, our motive is that girls should never feel that they're restricted in any way.
Being a girl, you can do each and everything, but the male can do.
Whether their newfound confidence reduces sexual harassment remains to be seen. But some of Delhi's women have decided to take matters in their own hands. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Coming up, China trims tariffs and poverty. You're listening to VOA Asia.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on The Voice of America.
This news from VOA Asia. Social media is debating a very public kiss between Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte and a Filipino woman on stage in Seoul Sunday. Duterte's spokesman said the kiss was an act of endearment toward Filipino workers. Opponents say it was misogynistic and an abuse of power. Visit VOA Asia Facebook and determine your perspective of top stories. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, easing tariffs and easing poverty are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
In a bid to open up its economy, China plans to cut import tariffs on nearly 1,500 consumer items beginning on July 1st. The tariff rate will be reduced from 15.7% to 6.9% on a range of products ranging from kitchen supplies to cosmetics to clothing. In many cases, the reduction is equivalent to a cut of about 60%. Xu Guanyao is the Vice Minister of Finance.
As one of the main developing countries in the world, China's move to reduce tariffs on consumer goods will serve the Chinese people in the first place. and it will also be beneficial for the global multilateral system and the development of the global economy.
The decision comes in the midst of ongoing discussions and negotiations between the U.S. and China on trade issues. While some American goods are covered under the new tariff cuts, the categories selected by the Chinese Finance Ministry do not heavily favor the United States. This is the fourth time China has made such tariff reductions. A Chinese government program intended to lift fishermen out of poverty in Fujian province is proving to be successful. In 2017, villagers' average income reached more than nearly $3,000 per capita, 20 times more than in the 1990s. The success came from an aquaculture training program that brought so-called gypsies on the sea from their small houseboats to shore. Liu Duren is a fisherman in Shipi village.
I had been living a tough life on a boat for more than 3 decades. In the 1990s, the local and provisional party committees asked us to go onshore and offered good incentives to us, including a house and subsidies. Then we went onshore.
Liu was given 2 or 3 trainings every year on how to grow oysters, and now his 6-member family can earn approximately $15,000 a year. Liu was among 1,400 people who were relocated by the end of 2013. Along with training programs, the government spent just under $2 million in loans for relocation and assistance. China still has around 30 million people living below the national poverty line. The government aims to lift more than 10 million people out of poverty in 2018. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia, New Zealand's pregnant leader says she will continue to work until the moment she goes into labor, according to plans released by her office. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern plans to travel up until her due date of June 17th and hopes to give birth to her first child at Auckland Hospital. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, every year, more than 15 million people worldwide suffer injuries and illnesses that leave them unable to walk. That's according to the World Health Organization. But new technological advances and physical therapy could help some of them walk again. Among the most promising is the use of robotic exoskeletons. As Erica Celeste reports, scientists at the University of Notre Dame are leading the way with their work on wearable robots that allow patients to regain some or all of their mobility.
17-year-old Lindsay Stofen loved to play tennis, softball, and run until last October when a rare disorder paralyzed her legs and left her in a wheelchair. But in late April, after becoming an inpatient at Marion Joy Rehabilitation Hospital in Chicago, the teen climbed into a specially designed exoskeleton, which supported her body and moved her legs.
I was like, dang, I'm going to be a robot. And then I was like scared at first. I was like, am I going to like it? Is it going to be okay? And then once I got into it, I loved it.
Lauren Belarzik, Lindsay's physical therapist, says the exo robots help to accelerate the rehabilitation process.
For someone who takes a lot of energy to walk only a few feet, exo can get them up, can get them moving. It can supplement their movements. It can get that reciprocal pattern, encourage the correct motor planning.
Besides speeding up recovery times, these robotic skeletons are especially helpful for those with paralysis from spinal cord injuries and strokes. Using the machine can help some patients rewire their brains to use secondary muscles so they can eventually walk again without the device. But Patrick Wenzing, assistant professor at the University of Notre Dame, says exoskeletons have one big drawback.
While existing exoskeletons are very powerful, right now they don't understand what the user wants to do. So in order to transition between activities in daily life, you often have to press a button interface to tell the exoskeleton, I would like to stand up now.
Wenzing and his team are collaborating with ExoBionics, a leading developer of wearable robots, to create a machine that can understand what its user wants to do without implanted sensors and complicated control panels. The new 3-year project, funded by the National Science Foundation's Robotic Initiative, hopes to achieve a more fluid, intuitive system. Taylor Gambin has spent the last year analyzing data from Exo users and comparing them to models of everyday walking.
So what we're seeing is that slow walking in general, whether in the exoskeleton or just the human, is much different from walking at a speed that you would choose naturally.
Later this year, the team will travel to ExoBionics California headquarters, where they will work directly with exoskeletons to design a program that interacts with users of various disabilities so that more people like Lindsay Stofing can get back on their feet again. For VOA News, I'm Erica Celeste.
From Italian to Chinese and Afghan to Ethiopian, there are many diverse ethnic restaurants here in Washington, D.C., yet opening up a new one with an unfamiliar cuisine can be risky. Sing Luan Lot is a former refugee with a passion for cooking and dared to open the first Lao restaurant in the U.S. Capitol. As VOA's June So finds, Thip Khao is thriving. Carol Pearson narrates her report.
Cooking is my passion. When I cook, I put 100% of my heart and soul into what I'm making.
Perhaps that's why many diners at Thip Khao are regulars.
My wife and I tried it and fell in love with the food, the freshness of the ingredients, the spice, the flavors, and it keeps us coming back. We've brought friends, and all of our friends have fallen in love with the restaurant, too.
Tseng Long Lot opened the Washington region's first Lao restaurant in December 2014.
What really amazed me was in summer of 2015, we were nominated the best 50 new restaurants in America by Bon Appetit. That was just like surreal. For me, I would just, how did it happen?
Long Lot started cooking at a young age in Laos.
I started cooking at the age of 7 and learned it from my grandmother. My mom was too busy working, so I have to cook for my 3 other siblings. I remember it was a joy for me to learn, to observe whatever my grandmother would give me an assignment to do.
Long Lot's family fled to Thailand in 1981 due to the impact of the Vietnam War, and her interest in cooking grew while living in a refugee camp.
I was 12 years old. I learned how to cook for my neighbors. We have neighbors from all over Laos, so I got myself exposure to different types of Lao cooking.
2 years later, her family came to the U.S. and resettled in the San Francisco Bay Area. As the oldest child, Long Lot continued to cook for the family while her parents worked long hours. After getting married, she and her husband moved to the Washington suburbs. Then, following her passion, Long Lot took over a Thai restaurant and started serving a few Lao dishes.
And it was quite challenging, is because not too many people know Lao cuisine. Not too many people know where Laos is. So I have to come out and teach my guests, you know, what is Lao food, where is Laos.
Encouraged by customers' responses, Long Lot finally opened a restaurant that exclusively serves Lao dishes in the U.S. Capitol.
Thip Khao means a basket, a vessel that holding sticky rice. It's a part of Lao culture. If you go to Lao's household, you're always going to see Thip Khao. It's a basket that is also meaningful for our Lao culture as well.
To deliver the authentic flavor of Lao cuisine, she grows some vegetables and herbs in her backyard that she can't find locally.
For example, we have kaffir lime leaves, which is the leaves that give a lot of fragrance, aroma to the salad.
This year, for the second year in a row, Long Lot was nominated as a Best Chef Mid-Atlantic semifinalist for the James Beard Award, one of the most coveted honors in the restaurant industry.
Cooking, being in the kitchen, make me happy. It's part of my life.
For producer June So, I'm Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Our listeners are all over Asia, including Myanmar. In fact, we have a Facebook page there in VOA Burmese. A lot of people listen to us in English. We thank everyone who tuned in today via Facebook and VOA Burmese. Thank you so much. We're also found on iTunes and SoundCloud. We're on VOA Asia Facebook streaming every day and our website at voanews.com. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Kelvin Fowler, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you enjoy your day.